Hello, this is Beatrice Pavia with part one of the pantograph of Friday, February 28th, 2025. On page one, there is a large collage of photos titled Birds Give Back at ISU, and the captions read, Takiya Brown, a junior at Illinois State University, spins the wheel for a prize on Thursday, February 27th, 2025, on the second floor of the Bone Student Center during ISU's Birds Give Back. As of 2:15 p.m. on Thursday, the annual fundraiser had raised more than $289,000 from 1,842 gifts. Birds Give Back has brought in more than $6.5 million for campus initiatives since it began in 2019. ISU's goal this year was to receive at least 4,000 gifts in the 24-hour day of giving. And the other pictures show students helping students with their donations and the prizes and cookies that are displayed. And our first front page story is about state government, headlined, Pritzker says Feds blocking money. $1.9 billion still withheld despite court order, Medicaid cuts loom. This is a Capital News Illinois story datelined Springfield. Governor J.B. Pritzker accused the Trump administration this week of continuing to withhold nearly $1.9 billion from Illinois state agencies, nonprofits, and small businesses, despite the fact that an order to freeze those funds was rescinded after a federal judge issued a ruling blocking the freeze. Meanwhile, Pritzker also warned this week that as many as 770,000 Illinoisans stand to lose Medicaid health care coverage under a Republican-backed budget resolution that cleared the U.S. House on Tuesday night. That resolution, which would amend the current federal fiscal year's budget, calls for deep cuts in federal funding for Medicaid, a health insurance program for low-income and disabled individuals that is jointly funded with state and federal money. In a letter Tuesday to the White House Office of Management and Budget, a letter co-signed by all 16 Democratic members of the state's U.S. House and Senate delegations, Pritzker demanded answers from the administration about why the funds were being withheld and when the state could expect to see the funds that it is owed. These are federal funds that were passed by Congress, signed into law, and promised to Illinois, the letter stated. State agencies, small businesses, nonprofit organizations, and everyday citizens across Illinois, including in rural communities, are still having trouble accessing allocated federal funding. The letter marked the latest development in an intense legal and political battle between the state and the Trump administration that began January 27th, 1 week after Trump's inauguration, when the Office of Management and Budget issued a memo directing federal agencies to temporarily pause distribution of billions of dollars in grants, loans, and other kinds of financial assistance. That memo prompted a flurry of lawsuits, including one that Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul joined. The White House soon announced that it had rescinded the memo after a federal judge, in a separate suit filed in Washington, D.C., granted a temporary stay blocking its implementation pending further proceedings. However, White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt added confusion to the issue when she posted on social media that the White House had not rescinded the funding freeze. It had only rescinded the OMB memo, quote, to end any confusion created by the court's injunction, end quote. On Tuesday, U.S. District Judge Lauren Ali Khan extended the temporary stay by granting a preliminary injunction. Despite the judicial orders, Pritzker's letter indicated the administration is still withholding $1.88 billion in federal funds owed to 14 state agencies, boards, and commissions, including funds that some of those agencies distribute to outside parties in the form of grants. These frozen funds impact programs that provide technical assistance for small businesses, provide affordable solar energy for low-income residents, improve roads and bridges, and more, the letter stated. On behalf of our constituents, we are seeking full transparency and accountability on any and all funding that has been paused or interrupted. In a separate development Tuesday evening, the U.S. House narrowly passed a budget resolution for the remainder of the current federal fiscal year that calls for cutting an estimated $888 billion in federal Medicaid and the Affordable Care Act funding. The resolution passed 217 to 215 on nearly a straight party line vote, with only one Republican voting no. Under the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, states were allowed to expand eligibility for their Medicaid programs to include all adults with household incomes up to 138% of the federal poverty level, or $36,770 a year for a family of three. The federal government pays 90% of the cost of covering individuals in that expansion group, substantially more than the 52% it pays for people enrolled in traditional Medicaid. According to the Illinois Department of Health Care and Family Services, as of June 30, 2024, roughly 770,000 people in Illinois were covered by Medicaid under that expansion program. Under the 90-10 split between federal and state funds, that translates to $7.5 billion a year in federal funds and $750 million a year in state funds to cover the people in that expansion group. However, Illinois also has what's known as a trigger law that says it will stop offering Medicaid to individuals in that expansion category if the federal government ever stops funding its 90% match rate. And speaking at a news conference Wednesday morning in Chicago, Pritzker warned that is what is likely to happen if Congress passes the Republican-backed budget plan. And our last front page story says, coroner says police killed boy, 15. Teen ID'd, Bloomington Police Department says he was armed, state police investigating. This story is datelined Bloomington. Authorities have identified a 15-year-old boy as the armed person who Bloomington police shot and killed Tuesday night. McLean County Coroner Kathy Yowder said the boy was identified as Cole L.M. Turner of Normal. Preliminary autopsy results indicate he died from multiple gunshot wounds. Bloomington police said officers made contact with Turner in the area of Arcadia and Fairmont Drives after multiple callers reported seeing an armed subject. As the call for service progressed, the officers fired their duty weapons and the subject was struck, Bloomington police said in a prepared statement Tuesday. No officers were injured. Bloomington police said after they fired on the boy, life-saving measures were attempted, but he died of his injuries. Illinois State Police was called to the scene to investigate Bloomington's use of deadly fire. The state agency said on Wednesday the investigation is active and no additional information would be released at that time. Yoder said the incident is also under investigation by the coroner's office. Toxicology testing is pending, she said. Regional Superintendent Mark Jauntry confirmed Wednesday that Turner was enrolled as a student at the Regional Alternative School in Bloomington at the start of this school year, having previously attended McLean County Unit 5 schools. The entire RAS family is saddened by his passing and offer condolences to his family and friends, Jauntry said in an email. We have made additional counselors available to students and staff and will continue to do so through this week. Members of Turner's family could not be reached for comment by press time on Thursday. And we turn now to some local and state news. This story is headlined, Man Jailed on Cannabis Charges, Dateline, Bloomington. A Taylorville man has had his pretrial release revoked in a McLean County cannabis trafficking case. Corey J. Worker, 35, is charged with cannabis trafficking, a Class X felony, unlawful possession of more than 5,000 grams of cannabis with intent to deliver, a Class X felony, unlawful possession of more than 5,000 grams of cannabis, a Class 1 felony, and unlawful possession of less than 5 grams of methamphetamine, a Class 3 felony. Court records indicate that Worker is extended term eligible for the cannabis trafficking charge, enhancing the sentencing range from 12 to 60 years in prison instead of 6 to 20 years in prison, as most Class X felonies are. The defendant appeared in court Tuesday afternoon for a motion to revoke his release. Assistant Public Defender Matthew Landry asked for a continuance in the case to look over materials. Judge Greg Minger granted the motion, and Worker was back in court Wednesday afternoon when the judge asked the attorneys to give arguments on his release. Court records indicate these charges stem from an offense that occurred on January 5, 2024. Assistant State's Attorney David Fitt said Worker had failed to appear on January 26, 2024, after he was released from custody 20 days earlier. While on pretrial release, the prosecutor said Worker picked up new criminal offenses in Carbon County, Wyoming. Worker was charged with 6 counts in the Wyoming case and pleaded guilty to 1 count of felony possession of marijuana. The date of the Wyoming offense was February 22, 2024, Fitt noted, which was after Worker was granted pretrial release in McLean County. He was released with conditions, including that he not commit a new criminal offense and not consume or possess any controlled substances. Arguing for Worker's release, Landry said the defendant had been accepted to treatment for substance abuse in Wyoming. Worker is also looking into local treatment programs, which he would engage with if released. The defense attorney noted Worker had relapsed after a personal loss, but he had previously completed drug court. Additionally, Landry said Worker is looking into community college programs to further his education. Fitt said 3 pending warrants for Worker's arrest in Illinois suggested he was not seeking change or a law-abiding life. Of all the conditions you were given, you violated every single one, Minger said, ruling to revoke Worker's pretrial release. Worker will remain in custody for the duration of his McLean County case. The defendant is scheduled for pretrial hearing on March 31st. And this next local story is headlined, Jail Sought for 5 in Underage Sex Sting. This story is Dateline Bloomington. A McLean County judge will reconsider pretrial release for 5 men accused of traveling to meet minors for sex who were released from custody in January. 6 Illinois men appeared in McLean County custody over 2 days in January following an Illinois State Police sting operation that had created online advertisements for sexual services. The defendants are Nathan J. Hansen, 45, of Bloomington, David B. Tarrin, 25, of Bloomington, Steve Adma, 21, who currently lives in Galesburg for work but is from Haiti, Michael A. Morris, 33, of Forest City, Khalid M. Farah, 21, of Arlington Heights, and Larry M. Miller, 60, of Tolono. They are charged in 6 separate, unrelated cases under similar circumstances, prosecutors said. Each defendant is charged with traveling to meet a minor, a Class 3 felony, 2 counts of indecent solicitation, 1 charged as a Class 3 felony and 1 charged as a Class 4 felony, solicitation to meet a child, a Class 4 felony, and grooming, a Class 4 felony. Hansen is additionally charged with unlawful possession of a controlled substance, a Class 4 felony. They are accused of communicating with undercover officers who they believe to be underage girls offering sex for money and arranging to meet up with them beginning on January 8th. Of the six defendants, only one man was detained during his initial appearance. The others were released with conditions. State's Attorney Erica Reynolds told the Pantograph her office had filed petitions for relief to reconsider weeks ago, arguing the original judges had made mistakes when they ordered these men to be released. On Wednesday, Farah appeared before Judge Jason Chambers for a pretrial hearing in which the state's petition was heard. Assistant State's Attorney Daniel Guido argued the petition for the state. Chambers also allowed additional evidence to be presented from the defense, represented by Phil Finnegan. Chambers ruled in the state's favor, and Farah was taken into custody. Finnegan has requested an appellate public defender to appeal this decision. Reynolds told the Pantograph her office will continue to argue each defendant be detained in their next court hearings. Morris, Hansen, and Miller will be back in court February 28th, and ADMA is scheduled for a petition hearing on March 3rd, and Tarrant has a pretrial hearing April 4th. And this next story says, state is looking for campground hosts. This is from the Southern Illinoisan and dated Springfield. The Illinois Department of Natural Resources is seeking campground hosts for the 2025 camping season for state parks, recreation areas, and historic sites across Illinois. Campground hosting is a perfect position for anyone who enjoys camping and helping other people. Hosts are often the first face to greet state park visitors. They check on arrivals and departures, write camping permits, acquaint campers with park facilities and regulations, answer questions about local and statewide attractions, and help visitors plan outings and more. Privileges for campground hosts include free camping in their own RVs, motorhomes, or trailers at designated spots within state parks. Above all, the quality all campground hosts possess is a passion for working with the public, said Calvin Beckman, Chief of Parks and Recreation for IDNR. If hosting sounds appealing to you, we would love to hear from you. Anyone interested in being a campground host can complete and submit a campground host program packet. Questions can be directed to the superintendent at the appropriate site. And this story is headlined, Few Schools Rush to Alter DEI. This is an Associated Press story, datelined Washington. Schools and colleges across the U.S. faced a Friday deadline to end diversity programs or risk having their federal money pulled by the Trump administration. Yet few openly rushed to make changes. Many believe they are on solid legal ground, and they know it would be all but unprecedented and extremely time-consuming for the government to cut off funding. State officials in Washington and California urge schools not to make changes, saying it does not change federal law and does not require any action. New York City schools said district policies and curriculum have not changed. Leaders of some colleges shrugged off the memo entirely. Antioch University's chief said most of higher education will not comply with the memo unless federal law is changed. Western Michigan University's president told his campus to please proceed as usual. The memo issued February 14th by President Donald Trump's administration, formerly known as a Dear Colleague letter, gave schools 2 weeks to halt any practice that treats people differently because of their race. Opponents say it's an overreach meant to have a chilling effect. The guidance appears to forbid everything from classroom lessons on racism to colleges' efforts to recruit in diverse areas, and even voluntary student groups like Black Student Unions. Education organizations urged a measured approach, warning institutions not to make any hasty cuts that would be difficult to undo. Ted Mitchell, president of the American Council on Education, told colleges that if they were in compliance with federal law before the memo, they still are. There is nothing to act on until we see the administration or its agencies try to stop something, Mitchell said, and then we will have the argument. And here is our two photos of people marching in a picket line. The caption reads, "Members of the United Faculty of ISU march on Thursday, February 27th, 2025, in front of Hovey Administration Building on the Normal campus during a practice picket after they told the university they were ready to strike over stalled contract negotiations. The union has said the majority of its members support a strike, but it has not called for an official vote on the matter." And here is Susan Hazlitt's column titled, "COVID is Nothing to Sniff At." "I just spent 8 nights sleeping in the guest bedroom. No, there has not been an interruption in marital bliss at the Hazlitt household. I took up temporary residence in the spare room because I had COVID-19. It seems weird to come down with the virus as we approach the 5th anniversary of the global pandemic. Can you believe it has been 5 years since we heard 2 weeks to flatten the curve? But as we know, some impacts lasted for years, many with long-term consequences. To reduce the risk of spreading infection, I sequestered myself away from the family. Thankfully, my husband and daughter did not catch the virus. My stepfather, however, came down with it the same day I did. I was literally texting him when I received his text with the same bad news. Our symptoms were cold-like, no fever, only congestion, coughing, and headache. We're now recovered, praise the good Lord, and the disruption was minimal compared to global events 5 years ago. Today, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends staying home if you're sick and returning to work or school when you feel better and are fever-free for 24 hours. But medical facilities like the nursing home where my mom lives have special guidelines to reduce the risk of outbreak. My stepdad and I were asked to stay home until we no longer tested positive, which makes sense. For both of us, we tested negative on the 9th day. That felt like a very long time, and it was rotten luck that we were sick at the same time. During my self-imposed exile, I read a few paperback mysteries, scrolled through the CDC's latest thinking on contagion, and noticed the wallpaper in the guest room is peeling off the walls. Some days I got dressed, other days I was just too tired and stayed in my pajamas. Each morning, my husband left a cup of coffee outside the bedroom door, along with disinfectant wipes and cough syrup. The aroma of the coffee never smelled so wonderful. It proved I had not lost my sense of smell. But talking through the closed door to my husband was the pits. I really missed his face. "What did you have for dinner? Are the dogs being good?" I asked, feeling very out of the loop. Soon I was peering out the window at the neighborhood, like Gladys Kravitz. My stepdad and I texted each other to compare symptoms and share photos of our rapid test results. 2 stripes, still positive. But unlike 2020, when anxiety and uncertainty were widespread, we felt confident in our eventual recovery. We talked to our family doctors and followed their instructions. Progress has been made in dealing with the virus and its multiple variants over the past 5 years. Sadly, there are still deaths attributed to COVID-19, but the good news is that number has significantly decreased. According to the Illinois Department of Public Health and the CDC, for the week of February 8th through 15th this year, there were 13 deaths due to COVID in the state, compared to 33 for this week last year. You may not be surprised to read the flu is driving most hospital visits right now. The Illinois Department of Public Health said data for emergency department visits and hospital admissions for the week ending February 15th shows COVID-19 and RSV are declining, but the flu is circulating widely. Nearly 6% of hospital admissions are due to flu, with 1.5% from COVID. Naturally, cases of COVID at nursing homes remain very concerning. My mom, who has Alzheimer's, did not understand why we were not there visiting, but the CNAs and nurses assured her we would be back soon. The amazing staff were working extra hard, caring for residents and trying to stay healthy themselves. It was a very happy day when I finally emerged from the guest room and hugged my family. Respiratory illnesses are nothing to sniff at, so be careful out there and take care. And this story is headlined, Have Local Impact by Becoming a Watershed Steward. Every day, rain nourishes fields of growing crops, and rivers steadily flow through natural areas and communities until eventually drinking water trickles out of faucets into our homes, schools, and businesses. The health of a watershed is tied to the health of a community, and understanding where water comes from, how it moves, and what impacts its quality and quantity is crucial to maintaining safe and sustainable water resources now and in the future. This spring, University of Illinois Extension is launching the Master Watershed Stewards Program to be hosted in McLean County. The Illinois-Indiana Master Watershed Steward Program is an 8-week journey designed to empower community members as a guardian of our precious natural ecosystems. Through engaging science-based education by local experts and group activities, participants gain the tools and knowledge to protect and conserve our land and water resources. Participants will hear from the Illinois State Water Survey, Village of Hudson, Trees Forever, and other key organizations that work to support our water systems. The course will run from April 1st through May 25th, meeting in person at the McLean County Extension Office on Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 p.m. For $84, participants receive all training materials and program support through the 20 hours of coursework. Topics include water quality science and the impacts of climate change, invasive species, and agriculture. After completing training, participants can connect with local partners to engage in restoration science, community science, and educational programs. Our three counties, McLean, Livingston, and Woodford, are included in the Sangamon, Mackinac, and Vermilion watersheds. It is vital to protect and preserve the rivers, lakes, and streams that run through our communities. To join Watershed Stewards and advance your local impact, you can visit extension.illinois.edu/lmw/events. Registration will be open until March 17th. If you need a reasonable accommodation to participate, please contact Darcy Weber or our office, which is the Illinois Extension Office. Early requests are strongly encouraged to allow sufficient time to meet access needs. And here is today's Flick Fact question. Though not the tallest college dormitory in America, Watterson Towers at Illinois State University remains one of the largest congregations of college students in one building and naturally leads to a logical question. How many times in an average school day does a toilet get flushed? And the answer is, while the average toilet in a home today averages 5 flushes a day per person and by far is the main source of water use in a central Illinois home, Watterson averages about 12,000 toilet flushes a day during the school year. At only 3 gallons of water per flush, that is still about 36,000 gallons of water a school day. And this has been Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Pantograph of Friday, February 28th, 2025. I look forward to reading part two with you next.